In those first few lessons of flight instruction, I was told to listen to what's going on in your cockpit. Hear the sound of the noise. When it starts to drop, you know that you're entering into a slow flight regime. Are you ready for it? Are you aviating? You know, the aviate, navigate, communicate adage. Are you flying the airplane? And of course, the FAA itself talks about this in the airplane flying handbook. Okay, so operation's very easy. You turn it on, you fly. It displays the wind noise and engine noise, but this is a prototype, and in the actual one, it's not gonna even need that. That'll come into play in a moment. It also detects coordinated flight. It has an accelerometer. These things have gotten very inexpensive off the shelf. And so it can provide information that not only you're entering a stall or you're entering slow flight, but you're also doing it in an uncoordinated way. Alarms are generated when you're heading towards those conditions. You just double tap to dismiss them. That last line's important, not a primary instrument. This device is not meant to replace any of the instrumentation on your cockpit. It's meant to refer you back to those instruments. Watch this short video. Let's try that again. Okay, we'll skip the video. It shows you it actually going into a stall. The novelty in this invention is that cabin sound detection. There's a machine learning process that enables this to be used on any airplane, so it's not specific to one particular airplane after you do some basic calibration. It gives you skill assessment through feedback. Now, this last line again. Proficiency is improved by pilot recognition of changing flight regimes. Pilot recognition, not this device. How you teach that awareness is, at first, the trainer detects the flight regimes that you're in, but a pilot, once they know what they're doing, can anticipate flight regimes. So there's a mode where you double tap the machine, and indicating that you're about to enter into one of these regimes, and the retrainer records it as a win, gives you a little happy face. It helps to reinforce the idea of staying in coordinated flight and recognizing when you're in coordinated flight. This is a quick graph of the secret sauce of it. If the judges have questions, I'll definitely go into that in a second. I did want to talk about the FAA's General Aviation Joint Steering Committee, who looked at a lot of loss of control issues and came up with these five reasons why people do it. The answer is, of course, proficiency. The way we develop and enhance proficiency in flight is through exercise, positive effect, intensity of training, the real thing, and recency of experience. This device, because it's easy to use and inexpensive, can be used again and again and again. Just gonna skip through that one because I wanna get to this one. I know that cost is a very low amount of your weighting. However, cost is very critical to hitting that 50% number. This uses off-the-shelf components. There's no certification for GA. My material cost in this prototype is $50. By the actual device that I'm hoping to be making in that fall 2019 timeline is about $12. I have considered it versus an education approach and an electronic approach. Right. Do you want to point out that proficiency
you, Rudy,
is taught?
Come to the end of your time.
Okay, sure.
But you do have 10 minutes with the judges. Go.
Okay.
So I really geeked out on this because I'm a professor and I love the mathematics behind this.
Yes.
We did this on helicopter transmissions a number of years ago, and it's amazing with one or two accelerometers and the proper Kalman filtering, other filtering techniques, you can tell if a tooth is chipped inside that transmission. So I sort of believe in that. What I want you to help expand on is, I believe in that base mathematics for a single airplane. Tell me, one, what regimes do you think you can detect? Like, can you detect left side slip, for example, do you think with this? And then explain to me a little bit more how you're going to transition from airplane to airplane, because I assume the user is going to teach this, the particular airplane they own.
Great. That brings me to my mystery slide. This is a nitty-gritty look at the math that's going on in this thing. This is an RV9, my friend's RV9. I've tried it out in a Luscombe, my own Cessna 172, and an RV9, great plane, by the way. the RV9's ship in this data, you can see the idle, cruise power, and max power. Those were settings that I took in a calibration mode. I sit here and flip through it and record that calibration mode while the plane is in a known configuration. The known configuration makes the math so much easier. After I have those, I have five specific data points, I create a series of functions that I can then apply to any new noise coming in. The graphs here show you the raw ones on the top, and the bottom one is actual wind noise. I do a quick sum of that, and I have a very good picture of what the actual wind noise in the aircraft is. Now, this technique is really powerful, and this processor is very underutilized at the moment. It's an 80 megahertz ESP32. I believe that I could actually tell left slip, right slip, based upon the sounds of various parasitic drag that's on the sides of your aircraft on one side or the other. But right now, the technology is just at the point of understanding whether it has a high wind noise or a low wind noise, and therefore getting the pilot to go back and look at that airspeed indicator.
Have you tried it in an open cockpit airplane with wires, where as you get slower, the wires make more noise?
I would love to have an open cockpit aircraft to try it in. I don't have one yet. But you're right, it's going to add more noise to it. This calibration step looks specifically at the lower frequencies of the signals that are coming in, because I find that wind and engine are right about at those two points. I do want engine noise too, because I want to be able to pull out things like your engine is currently running too high. I can easily tell whether or not someone's been running their engine well past the 75% point.
Did you factor in any possible change in noise if you had cabin vents open or not?
That is a really good question, and that needs some more work for
the,
sure.
The other thing is that your wind noise, your stall, excuse me, your stall speed, your critical speeds are going to be different based on the different flying weights, gross weights of the airplane.
Yes.
So your stall is going to happen at a different wind noise. Have you factored that in?
Yes, and to both of those questions, I'm going to say that I go back to the fact that this instrument is not primary instrumentation. It's not designed to tell you you're going into a loss of control situation. It's designed for that feedback loop. I sit here and double tap like this, and I say, oh, I'm about to pull back for my flare, and it notices that you've gone into your flare. Or you're doing other kind of maneuvers while you're practicing different kinds of maneuvers. You double tap, it shows you that you have recognized that you're about to enter into this. It's the ideal loop, hopefully.
I found this really intriguing because with the advent of noise-canceling headsets, I think we've all kind of tuned out an indication that we had growing up in our airplanes, whether it's engine or wind noise. It seems like there's a lot of potential for different ways to use the data that you're collecting with respect to noise. You're focused mostly on training, though, with this, or rather than a warning? Or tell me more about how you envision where this could go. And how that path affects loss of control.
So this technology is very interesting. What you were talking about detecting a problem with an engine using a system like this works when you have a sterile, exact conditions that you've already figured out the math for well in advance. As soon as a variable changes, like you open a vent or something, the sound changes too. And so therefore, I would never consider this technology something that you would want to use as primary instrumentation. Secondary instrumentation that is very useful information and great for teaching you to look at the correct instruments means that you're not overloading the pilot with a new source of data that they have to sit there and consult. They can continue to use that same lessons in the same approach that they were taught back by that CFI in 2001.
So help me understand a little bit, while you're standing up here, you seem to be weighting noise amplitude, how loud it is, whereas when I read your submission, I got more of the vibe that this was frequency content. And so I think this vent issue, do you think you can mitigate that with frequency content processing in this?
Mm-hmm. The vents are definitely going to be at a particular frequency. They pop up as spikes. You can see the spikes in here from different elements of the interference against the wind.
And so this would require no interface with the airplane. This can be a completely self-contained unit. You carry it in. I guess you got to put it in the same location in the airplane each time.
Yes, that is true.
But you could sense all these things potentially that everybody's looking at with one transducer mounted in the same place.
My cost for building this after in that in my second stage here, this is why I'm hoping to win this prize, because with that money, I will be able to create those 50 to 100 units. My cost to build those, well, once I've gotten through the engineering costs, of course, is about $1,250, which means that my company that I create to build these things can probably sell them to distributors for $25, and they can sell it for $50, meaning it really can be something that every primary student could get and use on every flight as they're going into their soloing so that they can get a sense of it. It really cashes in on that the FAA instruction principle of experience, exercising that capability of recognizing loss of control possibilities again and again and again.